Cause there's a man on my arm, and your name's crossed on my heart forever. You are your actions, relations, and I don't have the patience or temper.
Folks, welcome to the Hockey Show here in podcast form tonight. A little bit different than what we normally do. Obviously, we're not on the radio tonight with us being preempted. As you may have seen on the show information on Hockey Blog in Canada or on UMFM.com. That being said, though, doing a quick recap of everything that's gone on at the World Juniors. Obviously, a few scores that need to be reported and a few things that need to be talked about. One of the things that I do want to get out there, though, is that I appreciate the fact that people don't like blowouts. There have been a lot of blowouts in this tournament. In fact, 7 of the first 15 games featured blowouts, which is a lot of blowouts when you consider that on average there's about 4 per year. I wrote all of this down on Hockey Blog in Canada a few days ago, but it needs to be reviewed a little bit because some of the ideas that people have for making the tournament more competitive, I'll say, don't make a lot of sense. I've seen everything from we need to create two different pools, one for the big strong teams, one for the not so strong teams, like they do in women's hockey. I've seen reducing the number of teams from 10 to 8 to 6. I've seen lots of things that just don't make sense. I get that there's some competitive imbalance between the haves and the have-nots, that teams like Canada, teams like America, teams like Russia, teams like Sweden have resources that they pour into hockey every year and certainly do a lot of good with. Again, I can't deny that. There's a lot of money that these countries spend on World Junior hockey, and certainly it's not going to create a level playing field amongst the teams that don't have the same resources, such as Denmark, such as Kazakhstan, such as Slovenia. There are a number of teams that are going to be really good, that have a lot of good prospects that are coming up, Germany being one of them. There are some teams that seem to be stuck in neutral, like the Czech Republic and Slovakia, who haven't really, for the most part, made a dent in World Junior hockey in some time. I think that there needs to be a reset here, because people are basing the number of blowouts we're seeing this year in a year that hasn't been very, I'm going to say very normal. For the most part, we're basing it on a year that's legitimately an anomaly. It doesn't exist. This doesn't exist normally, where most countries are sending over teams that don't contain their best players because their best players have tested positive for a very transmittable virus. So we need to start tempering our wants and needs to change things the moment that things sort of go askew. And I say that because there have been a lot of blowouts over the years, 52, in fact, since 2011, if we count games that end with the winning team winning by 6 or more goals. 52 games out of a total of 317 games played as of yesterday. 317 games played of yesterday have ended in blowouts. And I guess that'd be 318 now because there were 3 more games played yesterday. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense that we're looking at this going, if one in every 6 games ends up as a blowout. And again, you expect that when having, 5, maybe 6 very powerful teams in each tournament, in a tournament of 10, you expect maybe to see 2 or 3, maybe 4 blowouts per setup. It's not hard to determine that, because the teams that come in as the 9th best or the 10th best teams are often not strong enough as the teams that are 1 and 2 in the world. That's seen in women's hockey, it's seen in men's hockey, it's seen all over the place. You can't deny that. Like, it happens every year at every single level. But to demand that this tournament be changed in order to give a more level playing field to the weaker teams, it's a bit of an insult to those teams that are determined as quote-unquote weaker teams. And I say that because I don't think that teams like Germany would get a chance, obviously, to play against bigger teams very often if we put them in a different pool. I don't think that a Czech Republic upset of Russia would happen this year because they wouldn't be in that top pool. I don't think that we see Denmark, for example, beating Russia in a shootout a few years ago, or at least taking them to a shootout a few years ago, because they wouldn't be in that top pool. I don't think that we should be looking at 1 year's worth of results when there have been other years where there have been a lot of blowouts as well. 2013, there were 7 blowouts in 30 games. Okay? So it's happened before. We can't, again, to deny that would be ridiculous. We look at 2012. 2012, there were 8 blowouts in 30 games. Now you're going, oh, okay, that happened like 7 years ago, 8 years ago now. Yeah, and teams have worked to catch up. In fact, we've seen better results over the last few years, aside from this very year. 2014, there were 5 blowouts. 2015, there were 4. 2016, there were 4. 2017, there were 2. 2018, there were 4. 2019, there were 3. Like, it's gotten better. 2020, there were 4 last year. It's gotten better in that teams are starting to close the gaps. But to take them out of the top pool and put them in their own separate mid-tier pool would do more harm than good, I think, in trying to close that gap. Again, you want them playing the best teams possible. You want them learning from the best teams. And in order to do that, they have to play the best teams. If you don't play the best teams, you don't ever get a chance to compete against them. And that's the part where I go, we need this to change. We need to change our focus. We don't need to change the tournament. We need to change our focus because we're losing sight of the fact of what's important here. And that is the fact that some teams, and I'll name them right now, because the Czech Republic, the Slovaks, and the Swiss have been in the top 8 for the past 11 years and have never once really been a medal contender. They've won. Like Slovaks and Czechs have won a couple of medals. But they've never really been a contender as far as going into a tournament and people saying they got a chance this year. Because they don't. They never have a chance. We know that. It's undeniable. So you wonder when you're looking at that those three teams in sort of that mid-tier division, away from the top 5 of Canada, Russia, Sweden, Finland, and the US, you look at those teams and you kind of go, well, are they even in the same grouping? And the answer to that is no, they're not. Combined, those three teams have a total of 3 blowout scores. 3 blowout scores in 11 years. The Czechs have 1, the Slovaks have 2. The Slovaks, if we're going to really sort of point out the inconsistency and the imbalances that we see, the Slovaks blew out Germany 9-2 in 2014, okay? So that was a bit of a surprise in terms of what's going on, in terms of seeing, you know, different scores that we never get to see. But then Slovakia blew out Kazakhstan in 2019, 11-2. Again, there's some clear separation here between Germany in 2014 and Kazakhstan in 2019 in terms of skill level, but Slovakia took advantage of 2 weaker teams and blew them out. Okay? That's not a surprise. We shouldn't be surprised by that. The Czechs, on the other hand, Czechs haven't really done a lot to scare anybody, to really put the fear of death into anybody, to make anybody sort of worry about anything. Their only blowout that they've recorded in the last 11 years came in 2012 when they blew out Denmark by a score of 7-0. Swiss have never done it. Swiss have never blown out a team. And yet they continually find themselves in the top 8, although this year they will play in the faux relegation round, but they continually find themselves in the top 8. What we need to be asking, what the IIHF needs to be asking, is how do we close these gaps? And I ask that only because I think that there is a clear indication here, very clear indication from one team specifically in Germany, that developing young players and having young players develop in systems, the CHL, college system, other places, having these players develop in systems that are better or higher skill level systems than what Germany may offer or what other countries may offer, only benefits them in closing those gaps. And we need to start seeing more resources input from the IIHF, from the various countries, into developing hockey at those junior level ages in order to really close the competitive balance. It's the same argument we've seen in women's hockey, and people have used women's hockey as the example as to how the World Junior should be played, but I disagree with that. And the reason for that is that there are two significantly powerful countries in women's hockey. Three, if Finland continues to its growth. Finland has been outstanding the last few tournaments and certainly deserves recognition for that. Sweden was there, and then they fell off because they stopped funding their national team program. See where I'm going with this? The Swiss, who occasionally have a player or two show up on radar, continually send their best players over to the university level in the United States. We saw Norway send over a player in Mattea Fischer to UBC, where she learned to play the game at a high level. And what I'm saying is that the women's game will never close that gap unless the women's programs in those countries start to develop better resources and better opportunities for those women. Prime example would be Russia. Russia is starting to look like more and more of a women's hockey power since starting their professional league. There's no doubt about that. You can't deny that Russia has come on in the last few years to really sort of add their name to the that mid-tier. They're not quite a Finland, but they're better than Sweden already. And that's got to worry a team like Sweden, or a country like Sweden, when Russia, who has a professional league, started up a very high-level professional league, is doing that well. Sweden has a professional women's league, gets great players coming from there, but they don't fund their national team as well as what the Russians do, and that also plays into it as well. So, if we go back to the World Juniors now, and we say, maybe if we see Austria, not so much institute a junior level program, but certainly fund their junior level program, help those players find places across the globe to play at high levels, we could see that team really make steps in the next few years. It's not going to happen overnight, but in the next few years, we could really see that team make steps. Same thing for Belarus, same thing for Latvia, same thing for again, Germany's already there, the same thing for Kazakhstan. We need to see these teams really take steps forward. It would also be important to reinforce this in countries like the Czech Republic and Slovakia and Switzerland, where we've seen good players come out of those programs, but they're all too rare in terms of the number and the frequency that we see. Nico Hischier only comes along once in a blue moon for the Swiss. They haven't had any other first round picks, first overall picks go from Switzerland. The catch here is that we need to ensure that the continuation of the cyclical sort of pattern of funding, getting better, continues to happen in these countries. If we can do that, we'll start closing the gap on the Big Five, and then those games in World Junior fashion will be much more competitive with all 10 teams. We won't get the big blowouts like we normally see. There will still be the occasional blowout. Teams will have a bad night. Teams will have a bad game. There's nothing wrong with that. It happens. It happens to all the best of them. It happens in the NHL. It happens all over the place. We've seen it happen. We know it'll happen. It just happens. But for a team such as Austria, who's been blown out every game basically they've played, that won't happen anymore if they can continue to take steps forward. And we need to start looking at how we fund this game globally as opposed to just nationally. Hockey Canada does a great job in terms of promoting the CHL, and certainly a lot of the stars in the CHL. Hockey Canada does a great job in terms of promoting women's hockey in this country. Same thing with Hockey USA. They do a great job in terms of their college system down there. They do a great job with their women's program down there. The catch on this, though, is that we need other countries to follow suit. Russia's starting to do that. Russia's going back to establishing strong sporting programs, both nationally and in terms of within their own borders, a good professional system and or junior system. They're starting to get that to come together, and it's starting to pay off. We've seen Finland do that. Finland's got a great system over there. But again, we need to start seeing more of that. We can't have half of it being funded by the, for example, the Swedish league, the Swedish Women's League, and not have the national team funded. There has to be some sort of payoff at the end, in that if you're going to promote within your borders the leagues and the teams that you want players to play on, then you have to promote at the national level if you want those players to go on and represent you at the international stage. And that's the catch on this. I get that there are economic factors that may limit some of the countries from doing this. But again, there should be a bigger global effort to have this happen. And certainly it would benefit everybody else. I mean, again, if we're talking about the CHL International Draft, the Canadian Hockey League International Draft, there would be more good international players to be brought over and certainly worked into lineups. It wouldn't just be a goalie-heavy system that we see. We would see more players like Nikolaj Ehlers, for example, being you know, from Denmark, being hosted by the Halifax Mooseheads. We would see, you know, players from different, you know, nationalities. Maybe a Chinese player comes over at some point. Maybe a Japanese player comes over at one point. Maybe an Italian player comes over at one point. What I'm saying is that we need to start making sure that these teams that want to have representation at the World Junior level on an equal basis, on an equal playing field, is to not ask the very good teams to let up or to play in a lesser way, because that's an insult to the lower ranked teams. What we need is to close the skill gap again. And if we can do that, if we can find that, suddenly we get a much more balanced tournament compared to what we've seen this year. Again, this year is the anomaly. Don't base everything on this year. But if we'd like to see less than 4 blowouts per tournament, you need to start closing the skill gap. And that's where this happens. Skill is important at the international level. There's no fighting, body checking. Yeah, it happens. Certainly there are big hits. But we're talking about a skill level in terms of scoring goals, generating offense, playing good defense, having high level goaltending that simply some of these teams don't have. And that's the catch on this. So if we can close that gap, we're off and running in terms of getting things going. That's my thought on it anyway. You can complain all you want about the blowouts. You can whine and moan about how, you know, Canada ran up the score on Germany on a 14 squad player. Again, how many times has there been a World Junior team with only 14 skaters? Again, this is an anomaly. It is not the regular thing. So Canada put up 16 on Germany. Who cares? This year is different than all the others. And we need to start remembering that, is that the tournament isn't broken. This year is broken. This individual year is broken. So stop wanting to change the world because one year went bad. It doesn't happen like that. It doesn't happen in any other industry like that. If you follow the process and you continue down that path, yeah, there's going to be bumps in the road, but you will get better hockey out of it. And we need to remember that. Going to take a quick break here, folks. Back in about 30 seconds time, and I want to talk Jack Roslovic and why he's making a mistake, I think, this year. Here on The Hockey Show, on an exclusive podcast episode of The Hockey Show. We'll be back in a few seconds, folks, as we get set for the second half of the show here.
Hey, it's the big boss man, your old pal GM Jared here, and I live for this.
Hourchuk wins it in. Here's Lemieux poking at the center. Lemieux ahead to Gretzky. Has Berkey with him on a 2-on-1 to Lemieux. And on goal, he shoots, he scores! Mario Lemieux with 1:26 remaining.
The Hockey Show. Thursdays at 5:30, only on 101.5 UMFM. Because we all live for this.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Still hard to believe that Dale Hawerchuk is no longer with us. Obviously, that clip reminding me of Dale Hawerchuk and just the great contribution he had here in Winnipeg. Did a big tribute to Dale Hawerchuk as well on this show, on The Hockey Show, on August 20th, episode 413, if you're looking for that. August 20th, it's up on Hockey Blog in Canada if you want to look for that. Great, great recap of everything that he did in his career and some of the big moments in his career as well. I want to take a look at another Jet, though, that's causing all sorts of waves right now, and that's Jack Roslovic. Jack Roslovic holding out right now. He is not in Winnipeg. He is not reported. He is still in Columbus, Ohio, reportedly, awaiting a contract from the Winnipeg Jets. Jets don't seem pretty concerned about Roslovic's absence in camp, although I'm sure they'd like him there. But I think this is a serious mistake by Jack Roslovic. Look, I get that Jack Roslovic maybe wants out of Winnipeg. There's nothing wrong with expressing maybe your unhappiness in a place if you have some leverage to change the situation. Right now, Jack Roslovic has no leverage whatsoever to change his situation. I have no idea why he would continually want to hold out and not attend training camp when there are multiple opportunities next season to make an impact on a different team? I'll lay these out for a few of you. Again, coming off a career year, 12 goals, 17 assists, 29 points. A 30-point player in the NHL isn't anything to really sort of, you know, have GMs wring their hands over and go, you know, we can't replace him. No, you're replaceable. And I'm going to say that up front. Jack Roslovic is replaceable. In saying that, though, if Jack Roslovic came to camp, put in the effort, really made a strong effort to go, I don't know, maybe 15 goals, 40 points, maybe 20 goals, 50 points this season in some way, some capacity, all of a sudden he's looking a lot more valuable and certainly maybe worth the effort to keep. That's important to remind everybody, though, that word keep, because the Seattle Kraken next year make their choices as to who they want on their team, and it seems that Jack Roslovic, who would be Jets property regardless of what happens this year, might be available for the taking for simply the asking price of take him off our hands. The Jets don't need to really get rid of anybody else. I know they have a number of roster decisions to make, but perhaps Jack Roslovic sitting out as a restricted free agent when he can't go to any other team, has to wait for maybe an offer sheet to come along, Jack Roslovic might be the player that the Jets offer up to Seattle simply to rid themselves of a headache. And that's good for Jack Roslovic. There might be an opportunity to play top 6 minutes there. There might be an opportunity to jump aboard and get some real playing time, much like an Alex Tuch in Vegas, who went from playing limited minutes in Minnesota to playing a big role in Vegas in their first year. Jack Roslovic may have that opportunity. But for him to sit out and not showcase those skills, it might make it harder for Seattle to justify taking Jack Roslovic as a player if he doesn't play this season. And again, we're talking about a 56-game season over the course of, what, 4 or 5 months? There might not be a lot of opportunity here for Jack Roslovic to change the way that people perceive him if he doesn't get back into the swing of things. Jack Roslovic could be an effective winger for the Jets. If he could play a little bit more like the Swiss Army knife on the team, he can check, he can play an offensive role, he can fill in, you know, in penalty killing situations, he can jump on the power play. If he could find a way to really sort of work on those individual skills and get himself going, he'd be a much more valuable player to the Jets and a much harder to dispose of player for the Jets. But right now, he's making it very easy for them to simply dangle him to Seattle if they can't get a trade partner for Jack Roslovic. So I don't understand his demand for a trade and holding out. I understand not having a contract, and certainly that would be a concern, but you'd think he'd come to Winnipeg and maybe try and work something out for a bridge contract, maybe a one-year deal, come in and prove yourself, come in and do all the things that you think that you can do or demand what you want. But he still needs to showcase his talents if anybody's going to try and trade for him. Nobody trades for an unseen, unknown player who scored 29 points in the previous season. Like, that's not even within the realm of hockey management at this point. Teams are very cognizant of the salary cap limitations they have. They are very cognizant about where dollars are going and who they're being given to. And giving money, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million a season for Jack Roslovic makes no sense right now. It doesn't even make sense to give him the league minimum right now if he's not willing to come and put in the effort. So I don't understand Jack Roslovic's idea here, because if he's really looking for that opportunity this summer, Seattle would be the best place for him. Seattle would be an opportunity for him to jump in, maybe grab a top six role as a winger, and really showcase his talent. If he wants to go back to center, maybe grab a second line center role or even a third line center role and roll with it. Go with it. Go hard with it. But he's not going to get that if he doesn't play hockey. And he's not going to get that if he continues to sit out and await a trade that the Jets simply aren't going to make because they don't have to make. The Jets have no impetus to make any sort of deal involving Jack Roslovic until the right deal comes along. And that's the catch here, is that there's no loss for the Jets with Roslovic sitting out. If he does sit out the entire season, perhaps the Jets can pawn him off on Seattle. If he does sit out the entire season, maybe somebody will take a flyer on him at the deadline or at, you know, in the offseason. There's no rush to get Jack Roslovic back in this lineup until Jack Roslovic comes to his senses and agrees to come back and play the role that he's given. He may not like that role. Again, I cannot stress this enough. He may not like the role that he's given, but until he proves more, it's the role he'll be given for the rest of his career because he hasn't proven himself anywhere else. And now someone will play, oh, you're just wasting a good young asset. I get that. I get the young asset issue in Winnipeg. There's lots of good young players in Winnipeg looking for bigger, you know, bigger chairs at the dinner table in terms of bigger roles that they want. But you're never going to get that unless you go out there and prove it. Jansen Harkins could be that player that goes out there and proves it this year because he took limited ice time last year and made something good happen with it. He took limited ice time, limited shifts that were given to him by Paul Maurice and turned it into positives. That's what Jack Roslovic has to do. Nothing is going to be given to him. It has to be earned. And right now it seems that he doesn't have that concept. And I'm not saying that he's the only young player that's had this problem. We saw lots of different players have to, you know, grow up, you know, mature, I guess, mentally before they mature physically. And while Jack Roslovic was an outstanding player in junior hockey, or, you know, for the U.S. national team program, there's no doubt that he could be a very effective NHLer. The problem is that he needs to go out and apply himself to do so, and right now he hasn't done that through in Winnipeg's eyes. The Jets can be blamed for part of this problem, but really the vast majority of this problem lies on Roslovic's side of the ledger. And having Claude Lemieux as his agent basically come out and endorse this behavior and saying, oh, we're going to hold out until we get something better. No, like, no, you can demand a trade all you want. But again, the Jets hold all the cards here. There is nothing that Roslovic can do right now. If Roslovic goes and talks to another team, that's big trouble. If Roslovic tries to swing a deal on his own, that's big trouble. The Jets are obligated to do nothing except re-sign Roslovic at the value that they want in order to see him continue his development. And if they don't, he still remains their property next year, still remains their asset for next year, and he's still eligible to be selected by Seattle next year. It's as simple as that. He's a restricted free agent. He can certainly be signed by Seattle at that point. Simple trade and sign option would work out well for Seattle in terms of getting a decent young player out of the Winnipeg system. But it would also benefit Winnipeg in that they don't have to give up any of their other assets or giving up an asset that they are deeming expendable anyway if they're exploring trades for him. So I don't understand Jack Roslovic's position here. If he really wanted to come in, really wanted to force the Winnipeg Jets to make a serious deal for him, to have teams come and inquire with Winnipeg about his availability, he needs to be playing the game, and sitting at home is not going to help him. Sitting at home is not going to benefit him whatsoever. Don't call me crazy if you want. Don't get on my case, but this is the reason why you gotta manage assets much better. And that part falls on Winnipeg, but it also falls on his agent. It also falls on Claude Lemieux being honest with his client about what needs to happen in order for him to make a trade happen, to facilitate this trade on his behalf. Because right now, it's not going to happen. He's come out, he said he wants out of Winnipeg, he wants a trade. His stock has fallen significantly because of that. Winnipeg will never get the deal that they want now because everybody knows that Roslovic wants out. So you done bad on this one, Jack Roslovic. You need to get yourself into Winnipeg and play your way out of this bad situation by busting your hump. That's the only way you're going to find a trade to another team. Otherwise, you cross your fingers and hope for the best when the Seattle Kraken come calling on Winnipeg's door. Other news out of the league this week. Obviously, big news, Shara going to Washington. Shara kind of railroaded in Boston, it looks like, where they wanted him to retire in order for them to hire him in an off-ice position. Not once have I ever heard Shara say anything about wanting to retire. So him going to Washington, who will play against Boston in this new divisional alignment that we have for this year for a one-year deal, $750,000 in Washington, might be a little just desserts, as Shara will go back to Boston a few times this year and certainly look to rain terror upon the Bruins for you know, kind of forcing his hand in leaving Beantown. So that's an interesting development. And then obviously the John Toews news, super scary. I don't know what's going on with John Toews. I'm not a medical doctor by any means, but it sounds pretty terrible in that, you know, his lethargy and unable to sort of get himself motivated for a season and, you know, feeling just blah all over the place is not good for John Toews. I really hope that they can figure out what's going on with John Toews, because he's a fantastic player and certainly proud Winnipegger as well. Happy to have John Toews represent this city, but scary bit of medical news right there. Certainly don't want to see anything bad happen to Jonathan Toews for sure. Henrik Lundqvist, obviously want to wish him the best as well. Going into 2021, he's going to go have open heart surgery to correct the heart issues that he's basically had this year. Unfortunately, won't see Lundqvist play this year because of that. King Henrik certainly needs some time off to get everything sort of corrected there. Hopefully this isn't the last time we see him either, because again, the King is always a better in the league than out of it for sure. But Henrik Lundqvist, with that scary bit of news that he's going to go for open heart surgery, so here's hoping that knock on wood that he can get through this fairly quickly, fairly well, have a full sort of recovery and feel better about everything that's going on about himself as well, because yikes, some scary news there. Run through the quick moves quickly as well through the NHL. You may have heard a few things or not heard a few things. We'll go through a few of those moves that have happened in the last couple of weeks that we've been sort of keeping our eyes on. Los Angeles Kings added Andreas Athanasiou. Holy, if I can spell that, if I can get that name out today, that's lucky for me. Athanasiou to a one-year, $1.2 million contract. Not sure that Athanasiou will be the player that they really need, but he could be the player that replaces Tyler Toffoli, who was a significant hole in their lineup after he left last year. So here's hoping that Athanasiou can figure out how to get his scoring woes solved after going to Edmonton and not really doing much there. Montreal Canadiens added Corey Perry on a one-year, $750,000 deal. Corey Perry is interesting that he's basically a power play specialist at this point. I don't know if he's going to provide much offense for the Canadiens elsewhere, but at least he's, you know, still a rugged player that he can probably play third or fourth line and put up a few points. But low risk, low reward, or high reward if they can get Corey Perry to put up, you know, maybe 15, 20, 30, well, not 30 goals, but maybe 15 or 20 goals in a Montreal situation there. Canadiens also added Michael Frolik on December 23rd. They also signed him to a one-year, $750,000 contract. He didn't play much in Calgary, didn't add much in Buffalo when he went there, but Frolik's he's a decent penalty killer. He can certainly add to their bottom six, a veteran presence on the bottom six there, so Frolik could be a decent addition for the Canadiens. Carolina finally inked 13th overall pick in Winnipegger Seth Jarvis to a three-year, $832,500 entry-level deal. Always good to see Jarvis, you know, doing well after his great season with the Portland Winterhawks, where he scored 42 goals and 56 assists. Carolina did take him 13th overall, so good to see that the Manitoba connections in Carolina are going to be rich yet again with all the Manitoba-born players that they have in Carolina. Ottawa's busy. Ottawa went and signed Tim Stützle. Stützle's been lights out at the World Juniors. I mean, a three-year entry-level deal with no financials weren't disclosed on his deal, but whatever they're paying him, it's not enough already, because Stützle has already made Ottawa, you know, a pretty fun place to look like they're like anybody's gonna go play. So congratulations to Stützle for getting the deal done, and for Ottawa. Senators swung a trade as they traded away some dead contracts for some real live people to help Tampa Bay a little bit. Senators traded the rights to Marian Gaborik and Anders Nilsson, both who will be on long-term injured reserve as they were last year, to the Lightning in exchange for Cedric Paquette, Braden Coburn, and 2022 second-round pick. Basically, Paquette and Coburn were the salary that Tampa had to get rid of, and 2022 second-round pick was the thanks for sending us the dead contracts that they can put on LTIR now in terms of getting under the salary cap. Paquette should be a solid addition, I think, to Ottawa's bottom six, but Coburn, he's lost a step. I don't know if he's going to be able to keep up with some of the players in Ottawa. He might be a safety valve for Thomas Chabot, maybe, as Chabot likes to rush the puck a little bit, but we'll see how Ottawa decides on deploying Coburn for the season. The 2022 pick obviously is going to be important, though, because Ottawa has a pile of picks that they're going to be using over the next few years, and this will only make Ottawa stronger down the stretch. Senators also swung a trade on December 26th. They added Derek Stepan from the Arizona Coyotes in exchange for a 2021 second-round pick, which was previously acquired from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Stepan has already mentioned that he wants to play a bigger offensive role in Ottawa, if possible, but he's going there with the open mind of playing any role they ask him to play, and I think that's good because Derek Stepan can be a good veteran presence down the middle. He doesn't have to carry the entire offensive load as a first liner, but certainly can be an effective second or third line centerman if they can get him up and running and find some decent line mates for him. So Ottawa really sort of taking on a new look this season, some of their additions. Chicago added winger Carl Soderberg. I really thought that Soderberg should have maybe gone back to Colorado, or maybe, you know, taking a flyer elsewhere. But Carl Soderberg will go to Chicago on a one-year, $1 million deal. Soderberg was effective last year for the Coyotes at times, but he is 35 now. He's slowing down. Soderberg was good in Colorado, though, a couple of years ago, but we'll see if he can find his scoring touch again in Chicago. Blackhawks also added Drake Caggiula. Drake Caggiula for a one-year $750,000 contract. That was back on December 21st. Caggiula will likely play in the bottom six, but he really provides some good speed, and he's an effective penalty killer as well. Chicago can certainly use his skills, and if he can find some magic, maybe, with a Patty Kane up on the top line, if they give him a chance to play with a little Patty Kane or maybe a DeBrincat, I mean, there's a chance that Caggiula could be an effective player for Chicago at a very, very reasonable contract. So we'll see how Chicago starts using him. Oilers dipped into the free agency market and added defenseman Slater Cuckoo on a one-year $850,000 deal. That happened back on December 26th. Cuckoo appeared in 42 games with the Blackhawks last season. Didn't really have a lot to talk about, just 10 points, one goal, 10 points. But I think that Cuckoo, in terms of his experience now, and again, I mean, we're talking about, you know, a guy who's played over, you know, in a number of different cities, but his experience might help out the Oilers a little bit here. The thing I think that's happening here, though, is that Cuckoo is just a stopgap measure for a guy like a Philip Broberg until he's ready to come over from Sweden. So we'll see how Cuckoo does in Edmonton, but it might only be a one-year deal there. Blue Jackets added Michael Delzato on Christmas Day. Delzato, again, looks like he might be a bottom-pairing guy for Columbus. He's certainly not going to take a job away from Seth Jones or Zach Werenka by any means, but yeah, I mean, 49 games with the Ducks last year. He had 2 goals and 13 assists, so he can still play the game at a decent level. So we'll see if Delzato makes a difference in Columbus. Predators added Eric Halla on a free agency contract, 1 year, $1.75 million. I think that Halla could be a very good player for them if they can find him a couple of decent wingers who can maybe cash in a few points here. Halla had a really good season in 2017-2018 with Vegas, and where he was allowed to sort of forecheck, you know, like they were going out of, like forechecking was going out of style. They were in on every play, basically causing nightmares. But John Hines doesn't play that system in Nashville, so I don't know what they're planning on doing there. Washington, as we mentioned, added Chara, but they also added some depth on their wings. They added Connor Sherry to a one-year $735,000 contract. Sherry has been lost since his first stint with the Penguins. He was very good with Sidney Crosby as a winger in his first go-around with Pittsburgh. Virtually invisible in Buffalo. He returned to Pittsburgh at the deadline and, again, looked lost out there. I don't see him playing anything but a bottom-six role for Washington, but I can't see Connor Sherry adding a lot. He just doesn't look comfortable anywhere but alongside Crosby at this point. And maybe that's more credit to Crosby in that he can make, you know, average players look pretty good, which isn't a long stretch by any means. The Capitals also invited former Ottawa netminder Craig Anderson to the camp on a professional tryout. Obviously, Anderson taking the role of what Henrik Lundqvist was going to fill this year and trying to get Ilya Samsonov ready for a starter's role. But it looks like the Capitals will wait till, I guess, the first day of regular season to put Lundqvist on the LTIR and then sign Anderson to a one-year deal. St. Louis, following that same route in terms of trying to get around LTIR problems and salary cap problems, they added former Panthers sniper Mike Hoffman to their camp on a professional tryout. Hoffman reportedly will sign a deal between $4 and $4.5 million once Alexander Steen and Vladimir Tarasenko are both placed on the LTIR. Hoffman will make that sting of losing Tarasenko a little bit less hurtful. He can score goals. He's been shown to score goals no matter where he's gone. And there's still hope that Tarasenko can return for the end of the season. Maybe St. Louis can have both in the lineup at that point. But we'll have to see how salary cap implications affect St. Louis going forward. Arizona were all about the PTOs this year. Arizona gave a PTO to former Toronto forward Frederick Gauthier. Gauthier's been virtually non-existent in his career. We'll have to see if it changes in Arizona. They offered a PTO to former Bruins netminder Zane McIntyre. McIntyre went over to the KHL most recently, playing with Dinamo Riga, where his stats were brutal. I don't know if McIntyre just couldn't get settled in Russia, or I guess in Latvia and Riga, but it was awful. He was awful over there. He's great when he was at the University of North Dakota, but yeah, no, he not good. Coyotes also invited former Blues defenseman Jordan Schmaltz to a camp on a professional tryout contract. Schmaltz played 43 games in Toronto and Bridgeport in the AHL last year, but again, I don't see Schmaltz being anything more than maybe a taxi squad roster player. If they need a guy, a seventh or eighth defenseman, he's there for him. And perhaps the biggest move, one that should be reported because of exactly what it means, the Avangard Omsk in the KHL signed Ilya Kovalchuk to a deal. 2-year deal, where it appears he'll play out the rest of his career. He's got a player option for the second year, but 443 goals, 876 points, and 926 games in his NHL career. Omsk, probably a good landing spot for him. Much like Datsyuk, will be one of those older Russian players that sort of plays out the stretch in Russia. But Kovalchuk's already scored for them as well. So congratulations for Kovalchuk. Obviously, he's finding it to be like home and has started to show up and play really well for Avangard. So we'll see how his progress happens, but it's likely we're not going to see him again in the NHL. So whatever happens to Kovalchuk, all the best to him, certainly moving forward. But those are your NHL moves that we've seen this year, at least up until the end of this year. So we'll stick with that. We'll see what happens come the flip of the calendar here. But that's going to do it for this podcast here, folks. Again, just a quick podcast sort of update everybody. I do want to leave everybody with Charlotte Cardin's Passive Aggressive, though. Charlotte Cardin's a artist out of Montreal, Quebec. And to be honest, the first line in her song, Hallelujah Baby, We're No Longer Together, kind of feels like how everybody sort of is treating 2020, that everybody wants to leave 2020 behind and move on to something better. So I'm going to leave you with Charlotte Cardin's Passive Aggressive here on the Hockey Show podcast. Again, you can tune in next week to the Hockey Show. We're going to have a pile of stuff going on next week as Jen and I return for the first show of 2021. So make sure you get in on that next week at 5:30 p.m. on the station, UMFM 101.5, UMFM, or on UMFM.com. Lots of different ways to listen. You can check that out on Hockey Blog Canada as well. With that, folks, we're out of here for another year. I do want to wish everybody a happy, safe new year. Make sure everybody is being safe today. Obviously, control your gatherings. Lack of gatherings would be great if you could do that to try and minimize virus spread and virus transmission. But if you are going to be in and around people, please be safe. Please remember that, you know, cabs are a very good alternative if you're going to have a few beverages. And by all means, we want to see you on the other side. So we'll see you next week, everybody, at our regular bat time of 5:30 p.m. Central Time on 101.5. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll see you on the flip side.
Hallelujah, baby, we're no longer together. 'Cause there's a man on my heart, and your name's crossed on my heart forever. You are your actions, relations, and I don't have the patience or temper. Together. Hallelujah, baby. I live